today, one in five Americans gets on average less than 6 hours sleep, and the number who report that they get 8 hours or more has dropped. Several large studies have linked sleep deficit with depression, poor work performance, driving accidents, relationship problems, and issues such as anger management. Heart disease, diabetes, and obesity have all been linked to chronic sleep deficit, and the list continues to grow. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and I'm excited to have you join me again to continue our journey to wellness. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern. But you know what? If you can't make it for the live show, you can now find our past episodes on iTunes. Just look for our podcasts there. We're on Facebook and Twitter as well. If you have questions on health, call us at 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Our phone lines are open now for your calls. We have a line also for our international callers and for you to text us. That number is 301-960-5144. Share with us your feedback, it is much appreciated. We're discussing sleep today. The director of National Center of Sleep Disorders Research says people just don't realize how important sleep is and what the health consequences are of not getting a good night's sleep on a regular basis. Sleep is just as important, he says, for overall health as is diet and exercise. Today, our expert guest is Dr. Conrad Bucker, Medical Director for the Sleep Disorders Center at the Shady Grove Adventist Hospital here in Maryland. Welcome, Dr. Bucker. Tell me, how many hours sleep do we really need for peak performance?
It really depends on the person, but the average man needs 8 hours of sleep, and the average woman needs 8.5 hours of sleep, and that may actually be a reason why women live longer.
Is that right? Yeah. I thought it was just because we multitask so much.
Well, actually, the multitask is out of the window now. It's not good for you.
Oh!
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's disappointing. Now, when someone undergoes a sleep has a sleep disorder, they undergo a sleep study. And I think we've got a video clip of what that involves. And to me, this is really fascinating. So when that clip comes up, if you wouldn't mind just walking us through us and explaining what our viewers are seeing.
I'll be happy to. Most patients are not aware when they're asleep. They think when they close their eyes and they open their eyes that they might still be awake. The only way to find out is to actually measure their brainwave activity. The other thing is we put leads on to find out if you're still breathing, and we measure the oxygen in the blood, which gets down now in the earlobe. We monitor them at night with cameras to make sure that if they have any unusual behavior, we can record it. These are the bands to find out if they're still breathing. Sleep apnea is one of the main reasons to do sleep studies. And now all the wires get attached and the patient will try and go to sleep. This is a large gentleman, so he most likely will be tested for sleep apnea. And most people surprisingly sleep well in the sleep center, even when they think that they were fully awake when they were there all night long.
And do you find that people are not as aware? They sort of overestimate how much sleep deficit they have? They think they didn't sleep when in fact they did?
Well, it's also the other way around. We have people who think that they...
Oh, what are we seeing here?
Here we see actually the brain wave activity on the first four or five channels, the eyes, the heart, and then the lower is the respiratory effort channels. So, yeah, it depends.
Great. And you were just saying that some people actually underestimate how much sleep deficit they have.
C- Correct. No, most people underestimate how much sleep deficit they have. So I've done all these studies which show that if you, for example, don't have somebody sleep all night, and the next day they feel terrible. They can barely function, they're uncoordinated, they're depressed, they keep yawning. However, the same deficit occurs if you sleep every night 2 hours less. 3 weeks later, it's the same. And most people, but if you ask them, they say, oh, I'm fine. I can function just fine. And they cannot. And this has been proven by multiple good clinical studies.
So we develop a kind of an unawareness of our poor functioning. We just get used to functioning suboptimally.
Correct. That's correct.
And we don't relate it to sleep.
So we don't relate it to
sleep. We're that unaware.
Yeah.
My. We've got a lot to learn from our dogs who sleep all day, nap all day, don't we?
Oh, we do, yeah. And actually, in the old, if you go 100 years back, people would sleep 8, 9, 10 hours a night. And, you know, we didn't have electricity. So, you know, it was dark and candles were expensive, oil was expensive. And now we can be 24 hours a day connected.
Yes, we can. So we used to sleep with the sun and rise with the sun. Is that?
That is correct, yes.
So we slept more in wintertime?
We slept more in wintertime. And we also had two kind of sleeps. So if you look at Stone Age cultures, they are still around. They typically sleep for 4 hours, and then they wake up around 2 at night. They're up for an hour. They kind of check on the herds or whatever, and then they go back to sleep and sleep for another 4 hours. So that's the way it used to be. But now we need to have more done, and we deserve our 8 hours of sleep or 6 hours straight.
So we drive ourselves to sleep, and we drive ourselves to work all day. That's very interesting. Now, perhaps we can put a print up that one of those polysomnograph pictures up, and just if you can describe to us what's happening. Now we can see the red.
Okay. So on the top part, we see the brain wave. We see the eye channels, and we see rapid eye movement. And that's typically what you do when you look back and forth. However, this patient, if you look at the second four channels, the patient is... it still looks like the patient is awake. But if you look at the chin activity, it's very low. And that means that the patient is in rapid eye movement sleep and is actually dreaming here. And there are three states we can be in. We can be awake, and so we're aware of our surroundings. We can be in rapid eye movement sleep, where our body is paralyzed, so we don't act on our dreams, because if that's uncoupled, then people get a very weird disorder, which is called REM behavioral disorder. And you can be in non-REM sleep.
And the bottom section,
That's the breathing channels. So that's where we check if patients are still breathing. And again, this points to a lot of sleep studies now get done for sleep apnea, because it's very common.
All right. So here we're seeing irregular breathing, so that would be rapid eye movement sleep. Is that right?
Well, it's actually the rapid eye movement is, and you see somewhat more irregular breathing. But breathing here actually looks fairly good.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's a typical rapid eye movement. Now, we're talking about rapid eye movement and non-rapid eye movement sleep. What are the stages of sleep? Can you just explain?
Sure. Well, typically, in the first stage, you go to sleep. If somebody would say, it's cold outside, you wouldn't respond. But if they say, the house is on fire, you're out. Oh, so the second stage of sleep, you're definitely asleep. And it takes a while to be awakened from that. But typically, you can answer, and you know where you are. Then you typically go into slow wave sleep, and that's during that stage of sleep. In the old days, we would call that delta sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And when they first started to show we would only see that in people who are about to be on death door if you're not asleep. But during that part of sleep, your body gets more restored, And then you go into rapid eye movement sleep. And if you try to actually to be awakened from slow wave sleep, it takes a while. It may take 30 seconds or more, and then you're still kind of confused what's going on. And that typically, you go into that after an hour after you go to sleep. You may be in it for an hour if you're lucky.
And then you
go into rapid
come through the... Then you go to rapid eye movement sleep.
And then you go back to stage one or two, and then you go again to slow wave sleep. And you may, if you have normal sleep, you can do that 4 to 6 times during the night.
Yeah. All right. And the cycle, the total cycle would be 90 minutes, is that
That's
what
correct.
You're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
All
That's
right.
correct.
Excellent. Have you found yourself repeating the phrase, I need to catch up on my sleep this weekend? Well, stay tuned because we will give you some tips on how to eradicate that phrase from your vocabulary. That's coming next. Go Healthy for Good. We'll be right back.
As I was reading The Great Hope, this phrase caught my attention, and I read, the seal of God's law is found in the fourth commandment. This only of all the 10 brings to view both the name and the title of the lawgiver. It declares him to be the creator of the heavens and the earth, and thus shows his claim to reverence and worship above all others. For me, as a true follower of Christ, the fourth commandment is a tribute to the Creator who made this world and me. By worshiping the Creator God, I have the full assurance and hope that my present and future life is in great hands.
Welcome back. We're enjoying the expertise of Dr. Conrad Bucker, sleep disorder specialist today. And before we went to the break, we were talking about the stages of sleep. Now, tell me, Dr. Bucker, what are the different types of insomnia that people might experience?
Well, you can have primary insomnia, which essentially means that they never were good sleepers, and they can even recall when they were 10 years old they did not sleep well. You can have an adjustment insomnia, which is kind of normal. If you know, we all have kind of gone through it. You have an important exam, or you have a job interview, and of course you can also have what we call persistent psychophysiologic insomnia, which essentially means you get so anxious about not sleeping that you start worrying, and actually when you go to sleep, your mind starts racing and you get very concerned and worried that you won't be able to sleep. And these people actually may sleep better if they're in a motel, because they're not in their usual room of torture, which ends up being their bedroom.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Well, it is terrible not to be able to sleep.
Yes. Oh, it is. I think we've all experienced that at different times. Yes, but I can't imagine that every night. Yeah. It must be terrible. What treatment options are there for people with insomnia?
Well, actually, typically I split it out first you have to do sleep hygiene. And the scary part is that in the United States, the number one sleep aid is still considered alcohol. And that actually does the opposite. So it actually makes you sleep worse. It may put you to sleep, but then 2 or 3 hours later when it lowers, it wakes you up and then you can kind of go through some withdrawal. And then the other very common sleep aid in the United States is, you know, what they advertise on television all the time, like Tylenol PM or Advil PM or Benadryl, and that actually does not help you sleep. It makes you groggy. It does not help you sleep. Mm. And so the prescription drugs, even while they have terrible name, they do work. And it's better for some people than for others. So one is giving a pill. But that really, you would like people to sleep without medication. And you can do sleep limitation. And sleep limitation essentially is if you normally say you sleep 5 hours, but to get 5 hours of sleep, you have to be in bed, say 10 hours. Mm. However, if you get the same 5 hours by being in bed 5.5 hours, we call it sleep consolidation, you feel much better rested. So often the sleep doctor will say, you spend too much time in bed. You should limit your time in bed. You should go to bed every night at the same time. Get up every night at the same time. And then we call it stimulus control, which especially works for people with persistent psychophysiologic insomnia. I say, if you can't sleep, you get up until you're sleepy again.
How long might that be, typically?
It can be all night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they're not allowed to go back to sleep till they are sleepy again.
So they don't go back to bed, they move out of their bedroom, something else, and then go back to bed when they're sleepy.
Yeah, that's one technique. It's called stimulus control. And you can do paradoxical ideation, which is, you know, instead of trying so hard to fall asleep, you try very hard not to fall asleep, which works for some people. You can do visualization techniques. You can do progressive muscle relaxation. There are all these different techniques, and all these techniques together are called cognitive behavioral therapy. And it works. And it works as well, if not better, than the sleeping pills. And that's really typically what we try and get people to do.
All right. Well, our film crew went to DuPont Circle in downtown Washington, D.C. to do some clinical research today. Passers-by were asked how well they slept and what they'd do if they can't sleep. Take a look at our results.
A very difficult sleeping pattern, you know. And it comes from working at McDonald's for 34 years. I worked there and I was always up at 4 in the morning, you know, and sleeping pattern is real bad.
I would say pretty well, actually.
I don't end up going to bed till about 11 sometimes. So, yeah, during the week I feel like I don't sleep very well or I don't sleep enough, but I do try to catch up on the weekends.
I think I sleep really well.
It varies not so much with my ability to sleep 8 hours, but with whether or not I have the time to do it.
I don't know if I get enough sleep, but I sleep well at night.
Not well, like I guess because I stay up during the daytime a lot. So at nighttime, I probably go to sleep like at 8, and then I'll wake up at like at 3 or 4, and then I'm up till the next day again.
Whether it's a TV or music or just any background noise, that generally helps me sleep better.
I usually do yoga every day after work.
Work hard in the daytime and come home and rest.
Usually tea, maybe a little bit of melatonin sometimes.
Well, I have some carbohydrates at night. If I'm feeling that I'm going to be resistant to sleep because I've been very active, then usually I'll gouge on carbohydrates.
I struggle when I'm really stressed, so I do things to de-stress before, so yoga, go for a run.
I usually turn off the lights and the TV and my phone and everything so that it's quiet in the room and dark. That helps me fall asleep a lot. And my fiance sometimes takes NyQuil to help him fall asleep, so I've tried that a couple times, but I don't know if it really works or not.
I try to unwind in the evening before I go to bed, so I generally try to slow down my pace and just read before I go to bed.
Well, I think I only use my bed for sleeping, so I try not to do work on it, and that usually helps. Yeah, and I try and go to bed at the same time every night, and I try to be active during the day, too. That usually helps.
I just try to, force myself to go to sleep sometime. Or if I watch TV, I end up falling asleep with that on.
I learned that you can cut your lights off and your television off, and sometimes you can get more sleep.
Well, I usually work out during the day. I try to eat healthy, and, you know, I try to go to bed at a fairly regular time and have a routine schedule.
We now have Daniel McKibben, a certified massage therapist, joining Dr. Barker and myself. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you.
Well, tell us, as a massage therapist, what treatment options do you have for sleep disorder?
Well, obviously, massage is one of the best ones. There's been several studies out that show that massage is beneficial for helping people to go to sleep. It raises the serotonin levels in the body, which is very necessary, useful for going to sleep. And another study they were doing on back pain and just pain in general, they didn't realize it, but as a side effect, the subjects got more sleep and more deep, restful sleep through that study.
Well, that's a nice side effect, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, it is.
Extra sleep.
Now, I know that for sure because I've done thousands of massages, and most of them are for people with pain. And believe it or not, when I'm pressing really hard and causing a lot of pain, these people fall asleep. Some of them do. Some of them yell at me and tell me it's too painful. But it's amazing how many people fall asleep as they're getting that massage.
True. And what would you massage? If you're looking at doing massage to help people sleep, what would you be massaging exactly?
Well, the studies have shown, the one study that I'm looking at right now, is that they actually did massage for the neck, the shoulders, the back, the thighs, the legs, the arms, and they found that all of them helped to induce sleep.
Now, what individually, or you mean the whole thing?
No, individually. Okay. They individually helped to induce
sleep.
So
any massage, really?
Yeah, that's right. Just good old wholesome human touch.
All right. Dr. Barker, you mentioned sleep hygiene, and I heard some of those people in the park mention some of those things. Can you tell us, what do you mean by sleep hygiene?
Well, it's kind of straightforward to some extent. You should not have any caffeinated drinks 12 hours before you go to bed. You should really go to bed every night at the same time. You should really not watch television for at least 1 or 2 hours before you go to bed. You should really go to bed at the same time, but even more important, get every morning up at the same time. And it was kind of interesting to watch it and hear the people say, oh, I cannot sleep without a television on. That's terrible. I mean, it really, they should not do that. They have gotten themselves into that habit, but you sleep worse. And then think of the poor spouse who has to sleep with them. So, yeah, so it's the bedroom should be dark, should be quiet, and you know, you should not be interrupted by neighbors, barking dogs. They have all these studies which show if you're close to an airport or close to a train station, you don't get used to it. You do have a higher risk of ulcers or cancers. So noise pollution is a major factor, and so those people should sleep with a white noisemaker. So
choose where to live wisely as well will
mm-hmm.
make a difference.
Absolutely, yeah.
Daniel, do you have any other treatment options apart from massage that you can think of that would be helpful, perhaps natural options that might be useful for sleep?
Yeah, in the hydrotherapy realm, there's a hot pack for the spine, and that's very helpful to help people rest and fall asleep. Even a warm bath is helpful. And then we have what we call a wet sheet pack. We use this for people coming off of drugs, like really heavy drugs, and they're having withdrawal symptoms. We use
a wet. Yes, they often don't sleep very well.
Hmm. Yeah, but it's not only for that, but for the withdrawal from the drugs, and that really helps them to sleep and induces a very, very deep sleep. We have some herbal remedies as well. So there's a lot of remedies in the natural field that we can try for that. I like catnip. It grows really easy. Almost anybody can grow it in the world, and it grows anywhere in the world, and it's a very nice one.
Dr. Barker, tell us, what's the relationship between exercise and sleep?
Well, exercise is good if you don't do it too close to bedtime. So it has to do with the body temperature. So if you, for example, with the bath, you want to take a lukewarm bath just if you're going to take it late at night. And you do not want to do any strenuous exercise at least 3 hours before you go to bed. So typically, you're more likely to fall asleep if your body temperature is dropping. So you try and kind of do that.
So try not to heat up.
Correct. Yeah.
And I guess we had a few questions last night from women menopausal. That can be a time that's really challenging for sleep when it feels like the temperature is moving up.
Well, typically women, once they hit menopause, they don't sleep as well anymore. It is, you know, and actually estrogen do help, but no sleep doctor will ever tell a woman to start taking estrogen to start sleeping better. We're too smart for that. But it does help with sleep. Yeah.
The estrogen would help for sleep.
Yes. So it has to do with you're just not... So yeah, you're absolutely right. Hot flashes, it's not good to poor sleep.
And once a woman's going through the menopause, will she ever sleep as well as she did prior to the menopause?
It's individual, but patients who start having insomnia, they have to, well, we all do. That's so unfortunate. It's as for men or women, the older you get, you still need the same amount of sleep. However, your sleep is much more fragmented and disrupted, and you don't have as much slow-wave sleep anymore. And that probably is during slow-wave sleep, growth hormone gets released. So.
And that's the hormone of youth, isn't it?
Well, it also gives you diabetes and cancer, so.
Oh, there's a balance then.
That's a balance there, yeah.
So any tricks for the elderly on getting better sleep?
Be as physically active as you can. Give yourself the rest. Stay away from anxiety-provoking things at night. So yoga would be great. I think massage would be great if that helps you relax.
Thank you. Today we have some very special demonstrations for you. How does it sound if I tell you we're going to teach you how to make some delicious, highly nutritious waffles with chocolate sauce on top? Yes, we're still at Go Healthy for Good. And what about some techniques you can utilize before bedtime to sleep like a baby? Stay tuned and we'll be back right after the break. Medical News Report, puberty, hormones and sleep. Breast cancer, another risk factor found. Childhood obesity, triggered by tonsillectomy. And massage, not just about feeling good. Surges of luteinizing hormone, or LH, trigger ovulation in females and the production of testosterone in males. It increases dramatically before puberty, and initially surges occur only at night. A new study of adolescents has found that most of the LH surges occur during deep sleep. The questions now raised: does disordered or restricted sleeping amongst adolescents compromise normal pubertal development? Young people, don't take the chance. Get good quality sleep, both for your brain and for your body. For the first time, it's been found that sleep habits influence breast cancer outcomes. Having fewer than 7 hours of sleep a night during the 2 years prior to diagnosis of breast cancer has been found to be associated with a greater risk for aggressive tumours that are more likely to recur. However, this association was strong only for postmenopausal and not for premenopausal women. So a lack of sleep may be a new risk factor for aggressive breast cancers. Researchers from Johns Hopkins found that weight gain following tonsillectomy occurs most often in children under 7 years of age. Average weight gain of 2 to 5 pounds after surgery was more likely in children who were underweight or normal weight at the time of surgery. Whether the surgery was performed for sleep apnea or recurrent tonsillitis, the weight gain was similar. So if your child needs a tonsillectomy, be sure to watch their appetite and activity levels after the surgery. Swedish massage significantly reduces pain and improves functionality in osteoarthritis of the knee. However, the optimal duration and frequency of treatment was needing to be established, so a large randomized controlled trial supported by the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine was performed, and it's now been established that 1 hour once a week is the ideal. That sounds both manageable and affordable, so find yourself a good massage therapist and get the relief you deserve. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Medical News Report.
Needy search for water, but there is none. Their tongues are parched with thirst. But I, the Lord, will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will make rivers flow on barren heights and springs within the valleys. I will turn the desert into pools of water and the parched ground into springs.
waffles with chocolate sauce. It sounds wickedly delicious, doesn't it? But wait till you see what goes inside. Daniel is more than just a massage therapist. He's a waffle maker par excellence. Daniel, welcome to Justin's Kitchen.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
What have you got for us?
Okay, we're going to make oat groat waffles to start with. And as you can see over here, I've got a whole bunch of grains. And we'll talk about this on a future show, on a gluten-free show, where people don't have gluten in their diet or don't need gluten in their diet. And so I'll talk about those in just a minute here. But let's just go over here. First of all, we're going to make waffles. But before we do that, Nared, I'm going to put you to making the chocolate sauce.
Oh, really?
And we're going to put chocolate in parentheses because it's not really chocolate.
It's not.
It is carob, and it tastes delicious, and if you enjoy chocolate, you'll probably enjoy this as well.
But it looks just like cocoa.
Well, I'm going to fool you, and hopefully we'll see if it works tonight.
All right.
Okay? All right, so we're going to start with the chocolate sauce first. This will go on top of the waffles. We take a raw banana, a ripe one, and if it's got little spots on the skin, it's just perfectly
right
for
this. Oh,
that's
the best. Yes.
I just got some yesterday at the store, really good price for them. So what you do is start mashing them up with the fork there until they get kind of a liquid. And then once you do that, we could, if we wanted to, add a little yogurt in there. And then we're going to start putting the carob powder in there. And by the way, roasted carob powder tastes a lot better than raw carob powder. So if you can buy the roasted, buy the roasted.
Okay.
And so what we're going to do, you're getting close there.
All right.
And while you're mashing on that, I'm going to work on this. And so all I've got here is what we call oat groats. Now, oat groats are just something you can buy in the health shop, and they are more wholesome oats. They've not been processed as much as the oats you make oatmeal out of. And you don't have to use these. You can use oatmeal and it's just fine. But I'm going to use oat groats. It adds a little bit of flavor and it's a little bit more nutritious, not a lot. All right, now I'm a dump cook. I hope you don't mind. But I'm just going to put in a few things here.
So you're not going to give us a recipe?
We're going to put a recipe up on the screen for those who like recipes.
Right.
But dump cooks don't use recipe, so I'm going to put in, I think the recipe calls for a teaspoon of vanilla there, and then I'm going to put a little salt in here, just about that much.
How's the banana?
Oh, that banana's looking beautiful.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful.
Right.
You're such a good creator. Now put some carom powder in there and just mix it up.
All right.
And while you're doing that, I'm going to put a little bit of oil, not very much, just a tiny bit of oil in there. And then the honey will help it to brown up. And so I'm just going to put a slight bit of honey in there. And as it's on the waffle iron, it's going to brown.
Oh, so as the sweetener gets hot, it goes brown. Oh,
that
adds a nice color. Right.
And the oil also helps it not to stick to the iron. Now, I'm just going to blend this for a second here because I don't want to do it for the full 2 or 3 minutes that it requires, just to show you the vortex. And by the way, before I blend, what's going to happen is we're going to create a vortex inside the blender. We want to keep the vortex about that big. And if the vortex gets too big...
So that's about 50 cent.
Yeah, about a 50 cent piece. If it gets too small, we just add water in there. If it gets too big, then it's okay. We can add a few oats in there and that works. All right, so I'll just do it just for a second.
I'm sorry, I should have said it's the size of a quarter.
Yeah, a quarter.
Yeah, I'm not speaking American. I'm sorry.
Yeah, speaking in New Zealand here. All right, so I'm going to start slow and then get faster here. For the demonstration's sake, I wanted to show you the vortex, but we're getting too much splash here because these oats haven't been soaked long enough. But anyway, you'll get the vortex and you understand what I mean by that. And then in the end, this is what it's going to look like. And that's your batter. And what I do, I wash my hands before I cook like anybody should. And then I just stick my finger in and I feel that. And I just give it this little feel. And if there's grit in there, then you need to blend it some more.
So you want it really smooth.
Really smooth.
All right.
And this is silky smooth and perfect. So this is really, really good. All right, and then we're going to heat up our waffle iron, which we've already done here. And you can see maybe the steam coming off. Just take a little spray, oil, not very much. Spray it on there, and here is the magic trick. And I've seen very few people do it this way, and I love to do it this way. We take some type of a nut or a seed. I've got sunflower seeds here, flax seeds here, sesame seeds here, and pumpkin seeds here. And what we can do is just sprinkle them into the waffle iron like that. And oh, they're beautiful. They get roasted into the waffle.
Ooh, nice.
And I am going to put more in there because I like a lot of seeds in my one. All right, and then we're going to take a little bit of this. And this thickened up since I blended it a few minutes ago. And so if I had more time, I would add water to this and thin it out. But for now, just for the demonstration's sake, there you go. And there it is helping me. So we throw in a little water in there.
It's amazing how little you need when you actually need to thin your waffle mix down.
And it's very typical for oats to thicken up like this. After they've been sitting in the blender for a few minutes and having been blended, then the starch really comes out and thickens them up, and that's just beautiful. All right, so we're going to fill that iron up like that.
It should be enough, I think.
Okay, and then once I squeeze it down, it'll spread out. Mm. And now, why don't we do something for children here? And if you've got children, you want them to eat those whole meal waffles, so why don't we just put a little face around here, maybe some hair and a beard, something like that, and then we'll take some sunflower seeds and make some eyes and a mouth, something like that, and then your children will really like to eat it. Now, of course, you don't have to do it this way. This is just if you have children. All right, again, so we're putting the seeds and the nuts in there, and then you just lay it right down like that, and we cook it for about probably 8 to 12 minutes. It depends on how strong your waffle iron is.
How this do you tell when it's cooked? Because, you know, it's kind of closed, the lid, you can't see through it.
Right. When it stops steaming, it's probably cooked. So after about 10 or 12 minutes, the steam will stop coming out, and then you can check on it and see the color. And here's the color of what, actually I've got a couple, three waffles here for demonstration's sake. And so can I come over here or should I bring it over here?
Let's come over.
Okay. All right, so there's our finished product there. You can see I've got flax seeds right there. This one's got sunflower seeds, and that one has a combination on that side. Now, I made two different waffles. This one did not have oil and did not have honey in the batter. Mm-hmm. This one did. So you can
see. You can see the difference in color there.
See how much browner that one is, and these are a little bit more paler. And those seeds got roasted. They're going to be delicious. You're going to really enjoy that. However, that's not enough. Now we have to take your chocolate sauce.
Well, look at what we've got served here.
All right.
This is a wonderful breakfast.
All right. So
we've got chocolate sauce, we've got blueberries, and we've got yogurt. And so that makes a lovely breakfast.
All right, so we're just going to break that apart there, and you can put your chocolate sauce on there, or carob sauce, if you have a more pure way to say it. And look at that. Isn't that beautiful? Mm. Here's some beautiful soy yogurt.
Yes.
Here's soy yogurt. We can put that over there. Oh, man. And the good thing about waffles, you can make a whole bunch of them ahead of time and then put them in the freezer and eat them through the week or the next few weeks.
Wow. Now I'm going to try this and
see. Get some carob sauce now.
Mm-mm. Oh, boy.
It's beautiful.
That is yummy. That's better than chocolate sauce.
I think it is. The banana sweetens it, makes it beautiful.
In just a moment, we'll take a look at some really good simple techniques that you can practice at home. It'll help you sleep like a baby. But first, there's another ageless advantage spot.
Is the obesity epidemic real or a lot of hype? Data from the National Center for Health Statistics shows that in the year 2000, almost two-thirds of the U.S. population was overweight or obese. Increasing your physical activity is an effective way to lose weight. Swimming, tennis, gardening, and bicycling are all good ways to be active. The epidemic is real. The good news is that you don't have to be a statistic. A physically active life is another ageless advantage.
Now Daniel is going to teach us very relaxing massage that you can do on your family and friends. In fact, if they're there, grab them and do it for them so you can practice while he's teaching you.
Okay, so what we're going to do is just a little foot massage, and relaxing the feet is a really good way to help a person to relax so they can go to sleep. And a matter of fact, you can get any type of human touch, and that's really helpful for people falling asleep. And so what I'm going to do here is we'll start on one foot here. I'll just put a little oil on that. Let's see, I'll take that container out of the way just so I can move around here. And so our first move is I'm just going to do alternate thumbs here on the arch of the foot. Now, some people are very ticklish in their feet, and you have to be careful how much pressure you put. If they have a lot of tickle, you actually put more pressure. And that just feels very, very nice. At least I think it does.
Hey, Tish, yeah. How's it feeling?
It feels great.
Feels good, great?
To you?
Good.
Okay. All right. Then I'll just take my fist here, and I'll just do a fist stroke right in the arch of the foot once
again. That looks painful.
No,
is it?
No, it's not at all, actually.
No?
Ooh,
I'm actually pretty ticklish, so...
Oh,
but
good.
I'm not feeling anything right
but
now.
But you're not feeling tickled?
No, not at all.
I'm a bit jealous. I wish I was down there and you were up here.
If you do it soft like a butterfly, you probably get ticklish.
Yes, I would.
All right, our next one is we're going to do...
it's important to be firm.
It's important to be firm. We're going to do what we call the lonely places here. And the reason it's called the lonely places is this is the place that nobody gets touched. And so that's right where the toes meet the foot. And oh, that is so delicious. That feels so good. That's probably more delicious than the chocolate sauce, I would say.
Is it really that good?
I mean, yeah, it feels good.
All right.
It feels weird.
Oh, it feels weird.
Yeah.
All right, the next one is we're going to go between the toes.
Oh, wow.
And so I do alternate toes. I do the between the second and third and the first and the second so I don't get in my own way. And then the next one, I go over to these toes right here. And, oh, that feels so good. I know it does. I've put so many people to sleep by doing this, I can't tell you how many.
Now, are you rushing because we've just got a short segment?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
So if you were wanting to put someone to sleep, you'd probably do this a lot more slowly.
Yeah, that's right.
And not necessarily more gently, but more slowly.
I would do it this fast, but
I
would be more thorough in each spot.
All right.
Okay, the next one here is that I'm going to just sit down here. And I'm going to take my fingers like this, and I'm going to pull the toe. It's like milking a cow. And I'm going to milk.
Us city folk don't understand what it's like milking a cow.
And I'm going to milk the blood down to the tip of the toe. And, oh, that is an awesome one. How's that feel?
It's strange.
Strange, okay. All right, we'll go to every toe and do every toe the same way. We're milking it down here just like that.
Yeah, that is. That looks just like milking a cow.
It feels like blood is releasing out of my toes.
Really?
Yes.
Don't worry, there's no blood on the mat here. Okay, then we can go up like this, and you can actually do the front just like we did the back. And so I just sit here. I go between the toes like that, and this is the top of his foot right here, and I'm going between the toes on top.
So before you came from the bottom down between the toes,
yes.
Now you're going from the top, well, what would normally be the top of the toes.
Yep.
Through between.
Okay, right. And then we just bring it on down here, and we can go around the heel here.
Oh, that looks, I think I'd like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks nice. How does it feel, Jitesh?
It feels wonderful.
Yeah? Hey, we got a wonderful for that. You're putting quite a bit of pressure in there.
I'm putting a lot of pressure, and this will relax him very much. You know, they did studies in a Florida hospital on premature low birth weight babies, and they found that if they received 3 15-minute massages per day per infant, that they had a 47% less of a stay in the hospital than those who did not receive a massage. And so...
So that was 15 minutes... three times a day.
Yes. They had better sleep-wake habituations and everything. There are a lot of things stabilized on these babies. And so their hospital stays were also about 10 days shorter than the ones who did not receive the massage.
That's remarkable.
All right, so that's it. Another one we can do is kind of a karate chop one. We're not going to chop it, though. I'm just going to take the back of my hand here, go into the arch of the foot just like that. Mm. And
our arches don't get a lot of pressure during the day.
No, they
what
don't.
What does that feel like, Jitesh?
It feels actually really good.
Really?
Yes.
All right, and then another one we can do is just kind of a pressure point one. We're going to go right, we're going to start at the toes, mm-hmm. and then we're going to go just pressure point down like that. Mm-hmm. If I cut my fingernails, so it's good. If you have long fingernails, you can give them acupuncture as well. All right, and then I got to go down the side of the foot, and then across the top, and then down the other side. So right. I've covered the middle and the two sides with that pressure point, and that feels really, really nice. Mm. Okay, and then we can do kind of a break the foot where you squeeze the foot together like that.
Oh.
We call that breaking the foot.
Break the foot. Now, you've got a lot of bones in that section of the foot, so it's almost massaging the bones,
yes.
isn't it?
Yes. All right, and then we'll finish off here. We need to finish off here. And we can just do a little pull here, and this is what I like to do. Just grab his heel and ankle like that, and I stretch him. And
just
that
the whole
stretch
leg.
Feels really good,
yeah.
and that stretch just goes up and down the leg there. And that's a beautiful foot massage.
Now you're going to have one very jealous foot, Jitesh.
Yes.
Well, I've got two jealous feet. He's only got one.
Well, that's true. Well, thank you. That's fascinating. And do that every night?
You can do that every night or the night you know you're going to struggle, who are struggling with insomnia. And I would recommend doing this right before sleep, maybe a half hour to going to sleep. And by the way, any type of human touch is going to make the person feel secure and at peace and will really help them.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Daniel. Thank you for posting your comments and questions on our Facebook page. Don't forget, you can call us live. The number is 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Also, from now on, we have a new way to connect with you, and that is texting. Remember this number, 301-960-5144. Send your questions and your comments. Grab your phone and text us right now. Let's get connected. And beginning today, if you want to watch the show again, or better yet, recommend it to a friend or family member, you can find the Go Healthy for Good podcast on iTunes. Yes, all of the past episodes are there right now, and they're absolutely free. We're still taking your health questions on sleep tonight. Post a comment on our Facebook page, send us a tweet or a text message. Dr. Bucker and Daniel will join me again after the break. Go Healthy for Good will be right back.
As I was reading through The Great Hope, this phrase caught my attention. All who have truly repented of sin and by faith claim the blood of Christ as their atoning sacrifice have had pardon entered against their names in the books of heaven. And this brought me great hope because no matter how many times I mess up, I know that on Judgment Day, when the books are open and my name is called, I'll have no reason to fear. Simply because Jesus will step in for me and say, I know her, and claim forgiveness for me because of his blood. So until then, I just need to have sorrow for my sin and have faith in Jesus by having a real relationship with him every day.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. We're taking more of your health questions now, especially those that are related to sleep disorders. Post your questions and your comments on our Facebook page, tweet us, or send us a text message. The numbers are on your screen. If you want to, you can also call us live right here in the studio. Share your question with us. I've got two experts here waiting for your calls. The number is 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now, I have a question here. This was a text. Good evening. I must say I am one of those people who don't get enough sleep. I find it hard to fall asleep before 1 a.m., even when I just worked 24 hours the previous night. Any secrets for this texter, Dr. Bakker?
Well, it kind of depends how many hours she gets in total. If she gets 8 hours, then that would be perfectly fine. She's just a night owl. And some people have a tendency to do best in the morning, and some people get a second wind at night. And if you get enough total sleep, that would be just fine. If you want to change your time to go to sleep, you should be exposed to bright light when you get early in the morning.
So this person could shift her sleep forward by using a bright light first thing in the morning when she wakes up?
Correct.
And you can buy bright lights?
You're supposed to get a light which is 10,000 lux.
10,000 lux.
Yeah, so that's kind of similar to being outside in a bright sunny day. So typically if you're inside, you don't have much light exposure, but if you're in a sunny day or, you know, you have been exposed. The other thing is to take melatonin like 3 hours before you go to sleep. That may also help you reset your clock.
What dose of melatonin?
That's very hard because whatever melatonin you buy is not what you get. So it's very frustrating. The official position of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine was for 3 years they didn't know if it worked for insomnia. And then, because they could not find any good supplier who gave them the right dosage. So it's frustrating. So that's the problem with the... So I would go for 3 or 6 milligrams and hope that that's what you get.
At 3 or 6, and then if you find it doesn't work, you would go up from 3 to 6,
probably. I would just change the manufacturer.
Change the brand, try a different brand and find one that really worked. Yeah. Why is there this problem with melatonin production or manufacturing?
I think it's with all medications which are not necessarily regulated by the FDA. That, you know, you're kind of dependent on the manufacturer, and they change and they switch. And
so not as stringent quality control because there's not regulation around them.
Yeah.
All right. There's a question here from Facebook from Jacqueline in Arkansas. And Jacqueline asks, I get to sleep okay, but then I wake during the night. What should I do?
Well, again, depends. If she wakes up after 4 hours and she's awake for a little while and then she has enough time to go back to sleep, that might actually be normal.
So you'd say get up?
If she gets frustrated lying in bed, get up and do something is relaxing. Typically, I do not recommend watching television. Maybe you read a book or meditate. And then once you get sleep, you get back to bed. However, if you're under time restraint, that's going to be a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah. All right. Now, we didn't really discuss about what the complications of prolonged insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to our bodies?
Well, essentially, we get fatter. We're more likely to have high blood pressure. We're more likely to have a heart attack or a stroke. We're probably not going to live as long, and we're more likely to get cancers. Plus, we're not very mentally sharp. It's harder to focus, harder to concentrate, and we're more likely to become depressed and anxious.
Wow, those are very serious complications of what appears to be a minor issue.
Well, it depends where you're coming from. Yes. From my perspective, is if you don't get your sleep, it's very hard to function well. But most people are not necessarily aware that they are not functioning well.
Mm. Now, Daniel, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I just want to say that on the first two questions, or the two there, is that sometimes eating late at night in a big meal, I know it interrupts my sleep very, very much, and that can cause me to wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning. And so eating late at night, eating a big meal, is normally not recommended if a person wants to get a really good, sound night of sleep, because the stomach needs to rest, the digestive organs need time to rest, and if they're working all night long, a person can wake up exhausted or not get that sleep.
That's a good point. Are there any foods that would kind of disrupt our sleep?
Well, I think typically if it's, you try and not eat much, at least 3 or 4 hours before you go to sleep. So carbohydrates are more likely to make you sleep, but then the question is, you know, you don't necessarily want to eat just before you go to bed some high energy snack. So, yeah, typically I would suggest not to eat before you go to sleep. There are a lot of people who report if they just have a meal, they get very sleepy, and it's true. Mm. I mean,
So that's part of sleep hygiene, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have problems with insomnia, don't resort to pills. There are so many non-pharmacological options that we've discussed tonight. Make sure you exercise at least 4 times a week, if possible every day. Have a regular schedule. Get up at the same time every day. Go to bed at the same time every day. Eat plenty of green leafy veggies. Have a warm bath, not too hot, perhaps with lavender oil and some soothing music. Get that foot massage, you'll sleep like a baby. Thanks for joining me on Go Healthy for Good. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Let's go healthy for good together. See you next time.